The Catholics of Oz is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to episode 25 of The Catholics of Oz. The Catholics of Oz is a show where we discuss faith, culture, and what's been happening from an Aussie perspective. Whether it's synods or science, apostolates and apps, providence or productivity, you can hear it right now on The Catholics of Oz. Hello and welcome to episode 25 of The Catholics of Oz. I'm your host, Lindsay Sant, and joining me today is Jerry Trapnell. Jerry, how are you going?
Very well. Good to be here today, Lindsay.
Yeah, good to have you in the co-host chair. Happy Australia Day for yesterday.
We're celebrating it today, though.
So yesterday was the date and today we get a day off today.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, so we... That way we get our traditional Aussie long weekend. It'd be a criminal not to have a long weekend on Australia Day.
So yeah. I'm wearing my Australia t-shirt, so I'm all kitted out.
Wait, that wasn't the same t-shirt you were wearing yesterday.
Yeah, it might have been.
Okay, all right, let's do it. Oops. Yep. Well, it is Australia Day, so you get a pass. Yeah. We'll talk about this later on, but the other day, I think it was last week on Friday, was the Chinese Lunar New Year, wasn't it? Is that right?
Saturday.
Saturday, okay. Well, we celebrated, but wasn't it actually on Friday?
I thought, anyway, we probably could have.
Any listeners?
we celebrated on Saturday.
Yep.
Yes. I thought it was the 25th, but...
Yeah. All right.
We were already attracting plenty of feedback, preemptive feedback for this.
We've got lots of comments.
Figure out your dates.
All right. So before
we had a lot of fun celebrating certain festivals and ceremonies and that over the last weekend. We might have celebrated a bit too much to remember when it was actually recognized or
but
observed.
Celebrate we did. That's the key. All right, more on that in a minute. Before we continue, we'd like to remind everyone, please, to remember to like the Catholics of Oz at the SQPN Facebook page. Any posts about us that you like help to promote us a little bit more to everyone else. Also, you can retweet our episodes when they're mentioned on Twitter. And leave us comments to help us out with our discussions. You can subscribe to The Catholics of Oz on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, or your favorite podcast app. We're also on YouTube, on the SQPN YouTube channel. So when you want to get more episodes about us, you can hit the bell and you'll get notifications about that. You can also leave feedback on Apple Podcasts and other podcast directories, and that helps to get our podcast out to more people. And to grow our community and to reach more listeners, which is what we're all about. So let's start with our first topic in something personal.
I bet you don't know anything about me.
You were born in Phoenix. You went to school in Tempe. You're an only child. Your favorite show is something called The Real Housewives of Atlanta. And your favorite book is Kendall Jenner's Instagram feed.
How did you know all that?
So Jared and I had a chat about this and we thought, there's been quite a lot of a big holiday period. So basically, the school holidays, or the summer holidays, I should say, go for approximately 6 weeks. And because I'm a high school teacher, I've managed to benefit from that 6 weeks off. I'll say more about how I benefited and didn't in a moment. And Jared also took some leave, didn't you, during that time?
Yeah. And I suppose because the podcast has been in holiday mode over the last sort of, six or so weeks anyway. I mean, we did have our first episode for the year released, what was it, last week or so? So we're recording Monday of the following week after, and this will be released in 6 or 7 days, beginning of Feb. But I suppose we've had a fair bit of time off and we've spent it doing various things, and we thought just give an update on what we've been up to and things we've been doing over the last few weeks.
Yeah. So now that cough is a preview of my holiday. and I apologize because there may be a couple more coughs to come as we record. So my holiday, I'd say, Jared, this wasn't my favorite of holidays, I've got to say, this time around. Although I did manage to do a couple of things, which was good. So what happened was, had a great Christmas, and was looking forward to celebrating the new year, the our normal new year. Unfortunately, I got sick with a cold in summer, because that's what you do in Australia. You get a summer cold. And this one was pretty bad, actually. It put me down for about 2 weeks. Then I managed to recover from that. Had 4 or 5 days where I was feeling pretty good. I started getting back into doing what I needed to do. I mowed the lawn and got a few, repaired a few things around the house. And then I went down with another cold all over again. And so I've actually spent probably about 80% of this holiday is sick with colds, which I have not been a fan of. Having said that, though, I did manage to get to do a couple of things, which was good. So I might just mention the first thing that I managed to do, and that was to go to the Arthur's Seat gondola ride in the Mornington Peninsula. So if you haven't been to Victoria, Australia, Mornington is a beautiful area, lots of beaches, lots of forests, just a beautiful place, lots of places to visit. There's a gondola ride at a place called Arthur's Seat, and essentially it's a nice slow, you know, ride that takes you, you can depend if you want to go up or down, but we started from up this time. It takes you down the mountain. It takes about 10 minutes or so, and you get a beautiful view of forests and beach and everything else. And it's just on a sunny day, it's a beautiful thing to do. And there's a restaurant at the top, or I should say more like a cafe, which, you know, we spent our lunch there and had a good time as well. So that was the first thing I managed to do. And that was actually right before all the terrible sickness started. another one, Jared, I managed to do. Have you been to Legoland before at all, Jared, in Chadston?
Yeah. So we went probably about a year and a half ago. Now, this is, I don't know how public holidays are done in the rest of the world, but in Australia, occasionally schools will have what's called these teacher days. So you're not going to like what I'm going to say here, Linz. But where the students stay home and the teachers go to school. And
yeah, the teachers don't get those days off.
Get their professional development and that. So yeah. What I've sort of figured is that I'll look and see when those days are, pick those days as an annual leave, because I've got that sort of leeway. If I pick a day, they'll pretty much say yes. And spend that day doing something with the family at a tourist trap or destination. And because it's not some of these professional development days for teachers sort of fall on a middle of term, no one else is taking that time off, and not many other people are going to these destinations. So I think a year and a half ago, there was one in May, probably 2018, so Caitlin's first year of school, and it would have just fallen on a random Monday in term two, say.
Perfect.
And I took the day off, and we ended up going to Legoland, and it was empty.
Yes.
No lines, no queues. We did all the rides as many times as we wanted to, which you'll go into when, I would say that is it. Yes. Yeah, so we've been to Legoland, to answer your question.
Yeah.
And when we went, it was empty as.
I'm a big advocate for going to these kinds of places on, in the midweek when everyone else is working. And yeah, every now and then I get a chance to do that too for different reasons. But I love things like that. That's very true. Chime in, you've been there before as well, but it's basically, it's a big center dedicated to all things Lego, aimed at kids. And actually it's funny because there was some controversy when it first started, because there were all these adults that were complaining because to get into Legoland, you have to go in with a child. So it's for children only. They need to be accompanied, obviously, by an adult, but you can't just go as an adult, buy a ticket and go in. Although in response to a lot of the complaints from the grown-ups who love Lego, and there are lots of grown-ups who love Lego, they actually take it very seriously, they started having adult-themed nights as well. So there were nights where adults could go and play with Lego too, instead of playing with Lego at home, I guess. Anyway, but yeah. I don't want to upset adult fans of Lego, so I won't make fun of them. It's got some really interesting rooms that you can go in. So when we entered the first room, was it there for you as well, Jared? There was a it was a Lego makeup of the city of Melbourne, basically. They had all these, all the iconic Melbourne buildings and tram tracks and whatever else, and they built the whole thing out of Lego. Did you see that when you went there?
Yep, so they had that. They had the Australian football oval where you could, I'm pretty sure you could try and shoot a goal.
That's right, yes, it was great.
Yep. I was wondering, if they were going to remodel that based on the second Lego movie and the tone being a bit more darker, whether we'd end up with an Apocalypseburg version of Melbourne.
Of Melbourne. Well, they didn't, but they did have random things. So they'd have, they had the giant, what's the giant Ferris wheel called? Is it the Melbourne Eye? No, it's the London Eye. The Melbourne something. Anyway, we've got a giant Ferris wheel in Melbourne that I haven't been to before in the Docklands. But, they had dinosaurs, near it, pretending to attack it. And they had things like that going on at some of the big sites. The Eureka Sky, the Eureka Tower with the Eureka Sky Deck, which is the tallest building in Melbourne, and it's a popular tourist place because you can, go up to the 82nd floor, I think it is, and see a circular view of all of Melbourne. They built that, and it, I think it was 80 hours it took to build, and however many bricks, it was great. But But I think just for this room alone, it was awesome to go. Just seeing a lot of these famous landmarks, and you mentioned the MCG and a whole lot of others. Seeing Federation Square and seeing what is it? Big train station, Flinders Street station, all these iconic places built out of Lego, and they're like surprisingly detailed. And Alexander, our youngest one, he loved the they had moving trams and things like that, or you know, along train tracks and things. So that was really good. And they're interactive, you know, you can press buttons and you know, diggers start doing digging work on the concrete and you know, jackhammering and things. So Legoland was great. In the rest of it, like you mentioned before, Jared, there were some rides. So we took a ride. There was one ride where it's like a magical carriage kind of thing where you go in and it's got pedals. So you sit there with another person, you pedal, and the more you pedal, the higher you go. And can I tell you, as awesome as that ride is, I did not enjoy it that day. So the reason we went was we went on January 4th, and it's my oldest son Damien's birthday. So we took him for his 11th birthday there. And as I mentioned before, I was sick out of my brain. But I said, I'm not going to sit home sick on my son's birthday. We're going to, you know, we're going to take him out, and I'll just suck it up and hope for the best. And so I was doing all right, except we had to do this ride. We had to pedal, and I can't tell you, it's the easiest pedal, but I was so exhausted afterwards because I was so sick and tired. And Damien's like, you know, pedal, Dad, pedal. I'm like, I'm trying, son, I'm trying.
We're going down, yeah. Dad, go up, go faster.
Yeah, I'm trying, yeah.
So it sort of floats and hovers a bit, maybe like similar to, say, the ET and the bikes like that. Like you sort of go up, pedal and go upwards like that.
Yeah, just like that, yeah. And you know, there was a – Damien really enjoyed. They had this car track set up. It's like a car racing thing where you could build your own cars out of Lego. So there's all this Lego everywhere. And you can build whatever car you want, whatever design you want, and, you know, stick some wheels on it. And then it would have this track where people put their car into a slot. I think there are about four or five or six slots there. And then, you know, you press the button, the barrier comes down, and you race your car against others. And so he continually made his car and modified it and was having fun racing with other kids. Some kids cheated and just put a wheel, like a solitary wheel, on their track, and that's all they raced. And the last thing that stood out, I mean, there were other things there as well, but the last thing that stood out that was great was the 4D cinema.
Yep.
I think, Jared, you managed to go and see that as well, didn't you?
So I think they have, I can't remember how many short shows we had. We ended up watching them all, spread out throughout the day. they're probably like 10, 15 minutes of just little, you know, skits, episodes, and you know, Lego-based themes.
Yeah. So we watched the Lego Movie themed one. So the characters of Lego Movie were invited to a parody of Legoland. It was called Lego something else, and they thought it was Legoland. So it's actually like this evil place where they're going to be hypnotized. There's a whole plot. It's quite funny. What I did like, without spoiling too much, is that in the Lego Movie, in the first Lego Movie, the antagonist was Lord Business, and this one, the Lego park was run by his brother, whose first name was Risky. So Risky Business. I'm a dad, and I found that quite funny. But the 4D, the 3D film was actually really good, and the 4D elements, you know, with the wind blowing, with the snow. So with this one, they had snow at the end, so they had bubbles, and it was like these thick bubbles that were kind of snowy. And I'll tell you what, Alexander, because he loves blowing bubbles, so he was all over that. It's like bubbles, bubbles, you know, he's touching them everywhere. And yeah, so it was really good. So so Legoland was something that we did. And the last thing I mentioned was, and this one I was feeling a bit better. It was a couple of days ago. My auntie Miriam, so we'll get her on the podcast one day, but she is a nun who works in Sydney at a parish in Sydney in Port Kembla. And basically she's on loan from Malta. Her order is in Malta, but she's been in Australia for a long time working there. And I know she's listening. So Auntie Miriam, if I got any of that wrong, you can just correct me when you like. But we, you know, we like to take her out. And there were two places that she came here on a holiday, as she mentioned, for 2 weeks. And there were two places. One was Sherbrooke Forest. And it's a forest in the Dandenongs. And it's famous for the Sherbrooke Falls. Well, you know, it's got like a waterfall. Now, I should mention, don't go rushing there if you really want to see the waterfall, because the waterfall is like a trickle. You know, it's like, it's nice. It's a beautiful sight, but you know, it's not like this massive, you know, don't think Niagara Falls or anything like that. Now we were fortunate because we went, so again, Aussie summer in Melbourne, we had stormy weather for a couple of days. So we went just after the storms had finished. So we went on a nice sunny day. And so there was plenty of water. So there was a good rush of water. And the walk itself was quite pleasant too. So it was, and it's only a half an hour walk each way. So it's a beautiful place at Sherbrooke Park. And then the other day we took her to the Melbourne Museum. So it's kind of a tradition when she comes that we take her to the Catholic bookstore in Melbourne. So she likes to go there. So every year we take her there. And then we go to Mass at St. Francis Church, which is right next to it. And this time we took her to the Melbourne Museum as well. I can highly recommend it. It's a great place to visit. And the entry is only, it was only $15 per person and the kids were free. So I'm a big advocate of free stuff, so I'm all for that. But the it was great. I won't mention everything that we saw, but some things that stood out were the gallery with all the insects. So they had insects on display, live ones, and dead ones that they show their life cycles and things like that. The wall of dead tarantulas was disturbing, and I'm not sure why they did that, but you could look at a dead tarantula up close. They had live tarantulas that you could see up close, and that was also equally disturbing. But the insect display was fantastic, and the information there obviously was really educational for Damien. The other thing that was awesome was the forest gallery. So basically, they built a forest inside the museum, and it's a decent sized forest, and it's got a pond with lots of fish and turtles and things like that, and it educates you basically about native Australian forest trees and plants. So I really enjoyed that. The one thing I struggle to recommend is they had a body and mind display as well, a gallery. The mind gallery was great in the way it talks about human psychology and issues of human psychology. But there was this one section, and I think I told you about this last time, Jared, there was this one section mm-hmm. where you could watch a film, and the film is designed to help you experience different emotions, to show how you emotionally react to different things. And it started out pretty cool. I had a whole lot of people, different ages laughing. And I was like, I could feel the laughing response coming on, just because there's people laughing. And I won't mention what came next, but man, it was disturbing. I was like, it grossed me out. I was like, firstly, the one thing that the laughing was broken by, this zombie-like face popping on the screen and screaming, which, kind of scared me a little bit. I wasn't expecting that. And then from there, it was downhill. I found I had to walk away. I was like, what on earth am I watching? I think the third emotion they were trying to make you feel was like, revulsion or being grossed out. And it worked. I'm like, okay, I'm done. I'm out of here. Yeah. So in between all the being sick and whatever else, I managed to do those activities, and they were really awesome. So would recommend all of those, Arthur's Seat, Gondola Ride, Legoland, Sherbrooke Forest, Melbourne Museum. If you haven't seen any of those in Victoria, I highly recommend them. And Jerry, you did a couple of things as well. So why don't you tell us what happened in your break?
Yeah. So mine was a little, I suppose, less adventurous than yours, given that I was back at work by that stage. So I think we had 2 weeks over Christmas, New Year, which covered last episode, being up in the bushfire semi-affected area of Locksport for our end of year New Year's holiday, which you were planning on coming to until you end up getting sick. So we were keeping in touch all day, and we're like, is Lindsay coming? Is Lindsay and his family coming today? And not today. We'll try again tomorrow. And ended up having to.
I took every legal drug I could to try and get better, and I was bedridden for 2 weeks almost. I missed that. So I was so sad about missing that. Yeah, but anyway, enough about my sadness.
Well, after we came back, it was basically working a couple of days after that. So we haven't done it as much, I suppose. One thing we sort of did. So our wives, we've mentioned previously that our wives are also sisters, and they've got another friend. And they're all, we might even have talked about this briefly, about the Spotlight store visit.
I think we might have mentioned
and the kite. So there was a kite festival on the same day. So all I knew was that it was a kite festival. So I don't have Facebook, and my wife got a pop-up saying there's a kite festival in our suburb. That's all we knew. So I was like, oh, maybe we'll go. So it was an all-day thing. And so it's for all-day thing from 10 to 5. And so at 10 to 4, I thought, let's go and see what this kite festival is about. Let's go and catch the last hour. So we went down there, and I could not find a car parking spot because it was still in full swing.
Really?
I ended up getting one that someone else was leaving, and I've got the 7-seater, so I had a bit of trouble fitting as well. So all the car park spots were taken. Street spots were people were parking on either side, and they had people assisting with the parking still at that point in time.
Wow.
Fortunately, we were lucky on our second pass, so I was able to get into a spot, and I was very thankful to the people for the assistance for showing me that there was a spot there, because I would have completely missed it.
Were there a whole ton of people in their homes just umming and ahhing at the same time as you and going, eh, all right, let's go check it. Let's check the last hour.
Might have been quiet from 10 till 3 and then, yeah. kite flying has never been a big part of my childhood or anything like that. I think when we have had kites, there have been epic failures, never getting off the ground or anything like that. So I hadn't really... Kites flying in the sky is like that's something that happens in stories, flying. It's not something I'm used to seeing as an actual thing. But when we got there, oh my gosh, the sky was coloured.
Wow.
With people flying kites, and some of them, you could barely see. You could see someone holding a string, and you'd have to follow the string up and up and up, and there'd be this tiny little pink or orange, yellow pin prick in the sky, and that was their kite. It got it up that high.
Was it just bring a kite and fly it, or were there professionals and stands and displays? How did it work?
Well, that's how it was actually, and we only found this after we got there, that it's an international kite festival. It's based on a celebration and a festival in India. I think it's the state of, I'm probably going to get this pronunciation wrong, Gujarat, which is on the left side of the map is the west, I think. So the west side of India, which I think is pretty close to Pakistan. They have a festival there, which is the Kite Festival. It's done around the beginning of January. And so basically the idea is to fill the sky with kites from dawn until dark. And which I didn't realize. I think it was just, some kite merchants going to flog their wares and get people to come and have a day of, relaxing and whatever, and kite flying. But so we rocked up and we ended up getting a kite. After our first one, we weren't going too well. So fortunately, Caitlin had a friend from school who was there, and he said, "Go and get another kite." So as I mentioned, it was an Indian celebration there. Were a lot of Indians around, and not too many non-Indians. So I was a little out of place. But fortunately, knowing someone there, he took me to the stall and said, "This kite doesn't work. Give him a new one." So I was probably fortunate to have it in there. So they got me a new one. And then when we tried to fly it, much better. So we joined the group of the crowds of people with kites in the air and got our own kite in the air, which was a strange feeling for us and for me, having not really experienced kite flying where the kite actually works. And so we did that for the festival finished at 5, but we were still going for till it was starting to get a little dark. I think the girls, the ladies had finished their shopping and come back to your house, and I was planning on organizing to come over, and because we were so busy with the kites festival, we never actually ended up organizing anything, so it ended up, dinner that night ended up being a rush job instead of something that we were going to organize because I kind of got busy with the kite festival. So we've flown the kite a few times since then. I think Damien, your son, has had a couple of goes as well. I've seen photos as well. So he's managed to get it up in the air as well. So, kite flying's now become a new shrapnel phenomenon, I guess.
That's fantastic. How did your kids respond to holding kites? Because I always when you see kids, usually there's that wonder on their face. They're holding this thing that's flying up in the air. What was their first response when they put kites up for the first time?
James's response was to try and run into the string. So when it was in the air, fortunately, he couldn't reach it. But when it was getting lower, he'd try and charge at the string, and that basically made it unflyable. So he wasn't much help. Caitlin really liked it. It's a bit of a struggle because you've got to do certain things to try and keep it in there. You've got to pull against it and let it sort of give it when the wind's blowing into it and pushing it away, you've got to give it string. But when it's falling, you've got to sort of tug it, and then it somehow manages to catch the wind and goes up again. I still haven't quite figured it out, but it's not a standing still activity, this kite flying business.
No. Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Go on. Yeah. Sorry, did you want to say anything else about that? I was going to move you on to your next one, but if you've got some.
Sorry. Yeah, that's right. So the next thing we've done. So we've sort of been looking at pets for a little while, probably since, late last year. And we knew we had a couple of holidays coming up, one a family one, and then the one I mentioned to you where we were going with the group of us to Locksport. And so we thought, well, we're not going to get a pet and then just try and find someone straight away to look after it. So got the holidays out of the way, then started searching for what do we want to get from a pet. And so we sort of crossed off the dogs because I don't believe anyone else is interested in walking them. And cats were, if you want a cat, you get the attention when the cat wants to give you the attention. and And then those are sort of things you got to register and take care of and everything else as well. And going back to, I think, our nephew Liam's birthday, was at a farm, and that farm had a area of rabbits.
Of course, yeah.
And when we were there, even your youngest son, Alex, was getting along well with them. You know, you expect a one-year-old to be charging at them, but there were times he was, you know, feeding them food, and when he patted gently.
Yes,
Our kids spent ages in there as well, and so we decided, well, let's go and see what we can do about getting a rabbit.
Good choice.
And so looked into it, and one of the things that was suggested to us that rabbits are social creatures. I mean, when you think of rabbits, you think of lots of them. So we figured out that getting a single rabbit wasn't going to work. And so we ended up finding someone who had a litter of six, and they were down to two within a couple of weeks of posting. So we thought, well, can you put those two aside for us? We'll go and get them. And so I think it's only been about barely a week ago. As we record, we picked up a couple of boy rabbits. We were definitely clear about that, making sure whichever rabbits they were going to be, they were going to be the same gender.
Otherwise, you'll have 100 by the end of next year.
Otherwise, we'd be rabbit farming. Yes.
Yeah.
And so you guys have come around and seen them. So I think we got them on a Tuesday, and by Wednesday, my wife's whole family had come around.
Yeah.
I got home and the driveway was full and the nature strip was busy.
Yes. Even Damien, he keeps saying, can we go and see the rabbits again?
Not go and see my family. Go and see my rabbits.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't want to see Uncle Jared and Auntie Silla. We're going to go see the rabbits. Yeah. Yes.
So I think they're dwarf or Netherland dwarf bunnies. So they're going to be light and small for the rest of their life, hopefully, because we weren't keen on humongous ones, like Flemish brand, where they could be bigger than children, I think.
Giant rabbits, yeah. That's true.
Yeah, so these are good holding, petting rabbits because they don't take up much weight or space on your lap. We're still working on setting them up properly. So at the moment we've got giant Lego blocks or giant building blocks as their pen, with cardboard and stuff on the floor inside the house. It's definitely a temporary setup.
Yeah.
We're going to see if we can figure out either building or buying a hutch. We've got an old TV cabinet back in the days when the TV unit was built for a CRT TV, so the big fat ones. We've still got a cabinet left over from those days sitting in our garage, and we might even try and convert that by putting fly screen and wire.
Yeah. Yeah, people innovate with all kinds of things now, don't they, when they do stuff like that. That's great.
Yeah, well, we've also looked up the price of a new... a new hutch and
$1,000.
Yeah, a lot more than the rabbits were. So we might see how we go with a bit of DIY to start with.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds really good.
So that's been our probably a decent recap of what we've been doing. Certainly a lot longer than I think we planned. We're almost halfway into the podcast now.
Whoops.
We had quite a few topics we might have covered. I think we're going to be trimming that a little.
Yeah. Let's finish off this segment though and just talk about also this weekend.
Yeah, we've still got more, but wait, there's more.
So now, as Jared mentioned, you know, our wives are sisters. So my wife Isabel and Jared's sister Priscilla, and there's a third sister, the youngest one, Jennifer.
You said my sister.
Okay, let's try that again. So my wife Isabel, your wife Priscilla, and their sister Jennifer. Yep, that's the. I'm just going to blame the cold germs on that. Yeah. Anyway, so their family and their parents, they're Chinese Mauritian. So they celebrate the Lunar New Year. They joke about the zodiac kind of stuff, you know, the year of the rat and things like that, but don't really take it too seriously. Although sometimes Isabel says, you know, Lindsay, you're a rooster, so you do this and that, like, whatever. But it is tradition to get together for the Chinese New Year, and celebrate. And so every year we've been going to Isabel's parents' house, and I think it's the one time of the year where Isabel's dad is very excited about cooking for everyone. So he kind of takes over the kitchen and cooks up a feast. And I think we are, I don't know, lots of food comas in January and late December, I think, just with all the food and all the celebrations that we have at this time of the year.
Yes.
But it's, you know, like the thing I like it, the aspect of it that I like a lot is that, any excuse for family to get together and be family is great. So getting all of us together, with all of our kids, the cousins getting together, and us with the in-laws and everyone together again, is great. I mean, usually we just sit there and make fun of each other while we eat, but or watch the kids do something silly. But we have lots of really good family time, and it's a great time for us all to get together. I think, Joe, you mentioned that even Pope Francis gave a greeting to people who were celebrating the Lunar New Year as well.
Yeah, so during the general audience, I think in the week, during the week preceding the New Year, so it is on the 25th. at least this website says so anyway. The who am I looking at? Zenit.org.
Yep.
Have called on the 25th, so I'll take the points on that one. So he says, so this January 25th, in the Far East and various other parts of the world, many millions of men and women will celebrate the new Lunar New Year, the Pope recalled. He sends you his cordial, so he says, I send you my cordial greetings, wishing that families in particular may be places of education in the virtues of welcome, wisdom, respect for every person, and harmony with creation.
Lovely.
And so he also finished by saying, inviting everyone to pray for peace, dialogue, and solidarity among nations.
Yeah, great. And we are, and then the next day, we celebrated Australia Day.
Before we get to Australia Day, one thing, which I think is probably going to become a family tradition after dinner, is the Mahjong table came out.
Of course, yeah. Go on, tell us about it.
So you hung on to Alex for most of that, and the tennis was on as well, which our local Hope was playing.
I was watching a thrilling match with Nick Kyrgios. Yeah, it was great at the Australian Open.
Yeah, so he was playing, I think, Karol Khachanov from Russia, I believe.
Russia.
Just to pinpoint our date. So while that was going on, we had a Mahjong table set up near the TV. Priscilla and Isabel's father, Eric, he used to play competitively. I think that's how they play in Mauritius. They play competitively. They don't play socially like we do.
Yeah.
So he played it, that way, played a bit in his youth. And now that we've, most of us have got an idea of how to play now, learned how to play, he's now joining in playing with his family. So he won most of the games, not by us letting him win or anything. He legitimately won them. I think that's going to become part of our Lunar New Year's, eat and then play Mahjong.
Play Mahjong, that's the tradition. Yeah. And so much did he love it that when we all went to your house yesterday for Australia Day, so we had a board games day. He turned up and his board game was Mahjong. They played war.
They kept going.
So he really loves it. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, but all these, bringing us all together, it's great like that. Now, Australia Day, there isn't so much of a formal celebration. I think we all just get together and I feel like it's the laziest day of the year, to be honest. But isn't that just quintessentially Australian on Australia Day? Isn't that what we do?
The most relaxed day of the year.
Yeah. I mean,
we're not lazy, we're relaxed.
Yeah, you're still wearing your shirt from yesterday, allegedly. So
did take it off overnight.
I'll just get back to you. Just poking fun at you. And in fact, that's why we're recording this podcast. Not that you'll notice when it comes out, but we're actually recording a little bit later than we normally would because it's just been a weekend of festivities and holidays and celebrations. So, which has been nice. It's been a good way to cap off
Before reality sets in.
Exciting holiday. Yeah, yeah. All right. Let's move on then. And if you who are listening have done anything interesting on the holidays, something that was great or a place and visited a place in Australia or abroad that was really interesting that you'd like our listeners to know about, we'd be happy to share that. But let's move on now to some topics for Faith Beyond Borders.
Well, I'm actually feeling rather good about this. I think we've all arrived at a very special place, eh? Spiritually, ecumenically.
How do you make somebody love you without affecting free will?
Welcome to my world, son. If you come up with an answer to that one, you let me know.
Yes, I had to work very hard to pass Latin and theology.
Quite. Those are, of course, the most important things.
Oh, yeah.
So, Jared, I'll set the background for this first topic. So, what's happened is last episode that there's been a lot of fundraising going on for the bushfires. So, obviously the bushfires in Australia have been terrible. They've wiped out a lot of land, destroyed a lot of property. They have, sadly, lives have been lost. And like we said, one life is too many, but the loss of life, fortunately, hasn't been as bad as it has been in our last terrible bushfire on Black Saturday. A lot of people have been left without homes or with homes that need to be repaired, clearly a lot of fire damage. a lot of towns that have lost infrastructure and things like that. So Australia and a lot of celebrities, as I mentioned, have been very generous in donating money. Now, unfortunately, when it comes to talking about where the money for donations has gone, some young, I don't know, first year reporter that needs a scoop, I'm making that up, I have no idea, to be honest, but it is common for the media to start talking about what they think is going on, and that's the way I'm going to put it. So, for example, the Red Cross was criticized because it hasn't spent all of the money, the millions and millions of dollars that it raised on bushfire victims right now. The St. Vincent de Paul Society, who we've been donating to, and we mentioned the Australia Day collection, which happened in all the masses around Australia for the St. Vincent de Paul Society. At the stage that this media report came out, it had raised $12.5 million. And I read a news article, and sadly, no, was it in The Age or our local broadcast? I forgot. But sadly, it said the St. Vinny's has spent a mere $1 million. Giving the impression that Vinny's was going to hang on to a lot of the money and not actually spend it on bushfires, but use it for something else. And it also said the same thing about the Red Cross and some other charitable foundations as well. So I don't get grumpy on podcasts, and I won't be grumpy today, but I was grumpy when I read that article because I knew there had to be more to it. Because, you know, the sad thing is, you know, for example, if you read articles like this on Facebook, lots of people come out and the comments start, I'm not giving to charity anymore. Typical charities that do things like this, typical Christians who like to collect money and not give it to anyone else. I kid you not, these are some of the comments that I was reading. And it was sad because it kind of forgets about the importance of what we're actually collecting money for and the idea that this money actually is doing things. So, Jerry, did you get a chance to read the Vinny's media release in response to these allegations?
Yeah, now, as you mentioned, it was, I think, within the last week or so. So it's, I think, the release is actually before the Australia Day
collection.
Collection. So correct. You mentioned that they've raised 12.5 million. So I'm hoping and expecting that that number is actually going to go a fair bit higher.
Yeah.
And so they have, you mentioned, I think the, I haven't seen the other release that you mentioned there, but the Vinny's article or press release mentions that they've spent already $2.6 million of the money. So, I mean, yes, it's only, if you want to use that word, it's only around 20%. But there's the fallout from this bushfire season is going to go on a lot longer than, you know, 2 weeks after. I mean, the bushfires aren't even out yet. How can you be criticizing where the money's been spent?
That's right.
If we'd spent all the money already, then there's people who are still going to, unfortunately, there still could be going to be properties lost and hopefully not, but possibly even lives and other things lost. So how can you have spent everything when the disaster's still going?
Yeah. And you know, what do people think happens? Do they fly over and then just drop bundles of money on people and hope that they'll spend it properly? You know, what do people assume that organizations actually do with this money? So let me just put the clarification in the Vinny's. And what saddens me is that the news story would be seen by a lot of people, but the media release that the Vinny's put out won't be seen by that many people unless they actually go to the Vinny's website and see it themselves. However, here's what they say. The St. Vincent de Paul Society would like to ensure the community that every dollar raised for the Vinny's bushfire appeal will be used to support the people impacted by the fires. Vinny's will not and never has kept funds from disaster appeals for any other work or cause. So they go on to talk about what they do with the money. But like you said, Jared, these fires are still ongoing. But they also mention, and one of our listeners talked about this, and I'll talk about her comment later on. She was very kind in what she said. But the thing is, the fallout from these fires, even after the fires will be out, it's ongoing. You know, when the fires are out, an instant home isn't going to pop up from the ground for these people to live in. They're going to need temporary accommodation. They're going to need supplies. They're going to need ongoing assistance. If they don't have many clothes because they had to evacuate quickly, they're going to need clothes for winter, you know, when it gets very cold. They're going to need assistance for at least, you know, a minimum of 12 months but before things can be rebuilt and land can be cleared and things like that happens. So I find it disturbing that any news outlet would even raise the idea that that charities are keeping the money for themselves or using it for something else. So, you know, they've collected $12 million and they're only going to use a mere $1 million or $2 million and the rest is going to go towards other things. I thought it was bizarre that the media would do that, especially considering a lot of them, their tagline is about truth and honesty and independent news storytelling and things like that. It seemed, now I don't want to sound cynical, but it seemed to me like they were capitalizing on, I don't know, maybe a comment that someone made somewhere, you know, an assumption that someone made, and they started, I don't know, making lots of references and news stories about it to get, you know, to get more, you know, likes and readers and things like that. Am I being too cynical, Jerry?
I think that's a pretty accurate description of where certain outlets seem to be heading. Not all of them, but
they seem to thrive on sensation sometimes, and it's a bit unfair.
Clickbait, I think is the word they use.
Clickbait,
they
yeah.
throw that around.
We're talking about the lives of real people, and it doesn't help to do anything to discourage people from donating anymore. And it seemed to me, and you know, I'm happy to be called out by anyone who's listening on this, but it seemed to me that the religious charities seem to be more in the firing line than anyone else. And I'm normally not a big, you know, pusher of, you know, the media is trying to get religion. I don't always subscribe to that idea like most people, like a lot of people do. But you know, this one was a pretty obvious stab at religious organizations, and it's kind of unfair. It's again that these organizations haven't got a chance to respond, you know, fully. And any response that was made in the article, so the Red Cross responded to the article, you know, like, you know, they were interviewed and whatever else. Any response that they make is going to be seen cynically because of all the commentary that comes before their responses, which are carefully chosen by the journalists to write their answers anyway. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'll put my tinfoil hat on now, but I think it was a little bit unfair. Was there anything else from the press release that stood out to you, Jerry?
There was. I suppose I'll talk briefly about, because these charities, so not just Vinnie's and the Red Cross, but any charity, has to go through a stringent set of rules and regulations. I think, I can't remember if it's dealt with by the state or federal, but you can't just nominate to become a charity and all's well. You have to go through specific hoops and you know, red tape, if you like, to be able to get your money to continue to be called, to continue, well, not so much the money, you have to continue to do a lot of excessive, you have to do a lot of things on top of what, say, a normal corporation would have to do to retain your, the fact that you are
a registered charity, yeah, an official charity. So, yeah, there are a lot of checks and balances, though, to be a charity as well, especially ones that handle this much money.
So you wouldn't, it'd be stupid and ludicrous to think that intentionally a charity like this is just going to keep money aside for something else. They've got a specific appeal for something. They have to include the money that goes in there, and then they have to include where it's been spent, and that'd be a separate item on their financial statement. So Vinnie's will have a bushfire appeal. They'll also have other appeals that they might have during the year, say like homelessness one or a domestic violence one or things like that. They'll have specific appeals, and each item of appeal has to be kept separate on what they get and then what they spend it on. So it'd be ludicrous to suggest that they're going to hang on to it and put it somewhere else, because they would be in breach of what their fiduciary duties are.
Yeah, I mean, they're breaking the law, really, in a way. So, yeah, why would you do that?
So it's a foolish thing to even consider that, you know, and find that believable to me.
Yeah.
But so going back to the article, so one tiny little paragraph in, I think, 9 or 10 of them of the Vinnie's release says that no administration fees are taken from this appeal, meaning the money raised goes directly to the relief and recovery effort. And anyone who's thinking that, you know, I'm not going to give to charities anymore because they hang on to the money, etc., read that line and figure out, well, if they're not going to receive the administration fees, where's it going to come from?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, because that's what they're saying, that they're not even going to take an administration charge for putting the money, taking the money, recording it, dealing with the legislation and compliance that they've got to in this matter, and then arranging for it to be distributed, paid out, or spent on those affected by the bushfires. Essentially, they're saying they're not going to take any money from that appeal for themselves to be able to do that.
Yeah, and it says here, you know, Vinnie's is focused on doing what it has always done, assist people to rebuild their lives as they reestablish their homes, their livelihoods, and their spirit. We will provide assistance now and during the difficult months ahead for the people who have lost everything. And they mentioned they've got, you know, boots on the ground. They've got people, you know, So this CEO of Vinnie's Canberra Goulburn, Barney Van Wyk, he's been visiting communities already and seeing their needs, you know, the people in the South Coast, to see what it is that they need. He's been reaching out to, or he's going to be meeting with one of the local ministers there to talk about what Vinnie's can do as well. The New South Wales CEO, Jack De Groot, has visited the South Coast as well. And he's also offered to meet politicians to see what can be done as well. Anyway, no more grumpy.
Before we get too worked up, I think the people that donated to Vinnie's and have donated in the past and will donate in the future are going to continue to do so regardless of what sensationalist articles they find or read. While potentially, and I don't mean this as a blanket smear, people that say I'm never going to donate to charities anymore, I'd question how much they do in the first place.
Without trying
to throw a barb or
but it does bring some of their journalistic credibility into question. That's, you know, if they're just going to go with the sensational thing. But anyway, from us at Catholics of Oz, you know, all credit to St. Vinnie's and the Red Cross and all those who are doing really good things to help bushfire victims. And let's keep the victims of bushfires at the front of everything that we think about when it comes to what's been happening. And let's continue to give them ongoing support. And if it means supporting them through charities like St. Vinnie's and others, then we're all for it. And you can also look at how much money Vinnie's has raised in the context of the bishop's response to the bushfires that we talked about in our last episode. Things are happening and things will continue to happen. And I'm happy to put my neck out on the line for Vinnie's reputation. Unless they're found out to do something wrong, then I withdraw my neck. But otherwise...
Well, it's not even that. Yeah. So they're talking about what's being presented is that Vinnie's are going to intentionally do things. So yes, like any other organization, Vinnie's is susceptible to fraud, susceptible to people taking money on the sly, no different to any other entity with a LTD after their name or any other corporation. And that's different to what's being suggested in these articles. So
correct.
If someone does end up taking money from Vinnie's, well, I'll still support Vinnie's and hopefully they'll end up tightening their policies to make it more difficult for crooks and schemers to be able to operate. But
yeah,
from what's been suggested here and what Vinnie's are doing and not putting money where it's supposed to go, that's, to me, it's just a silly charge, which is, to me, it doesn't hold any weight at all, which I think is pretty clear cut.
Yeah, but, agreed.
This day and age, Vinnie's has to make a press release to counteract such a thing. That's day and age we live in.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so just being conscious of time, why don't we just whip through very quickly some of these? I know. Yeah,
usually I'm the time policeman.
Yeah, we're both noticing it today. This is our Australia Day episode, I think.
We're a bit more relaxed, like Australia Day. It's a relaxed episode.
Yeah. So we just wanted to mention, because this is a Faith Beyond Borders segment, just very, very briefly, some other Australians who have been honoured or recognised in different ways over the Australia Day weekend and recently for some of the good things that they've been doing. So first of all, Jared, if we just go to the biomedical engineer article, and this is in relation to Dr. Carmine Gentile. I hope that's how we pronounce his name correctly. But he recently won the Sydney Archdiocese Research Grant. So basically this grant was started, I'd say almost a decade ago from memory, but it's been around for a while. But what happens is this grant was in response to when there was a big fervor about embryonic stem cell research. So there was a while where there was peak hysteria about how embryonic stem cell research was going to cure every disease under the sun. It was going to be the golden or silver bullet, I should say, for everything. The Catholic Church disagreed, rightly so, I think. And they started a grant where they would start rewarding, or awarding it to, I should say, scientists and researchers who had strong potential in the areas of adult stem cell research. So this year, Dr. Carmine Gentile, he's been doing research on on using adult stem cells and 3D bioprinting to replace heart patches and help patients with heart failure, which is a really amazing bit of research. Now, I'm not an expert in these things, and he is. He was honored by the Catholic Church for that work, and we wanted to just mention that. Jared, is there anything you wanted to quickly say about this award?
Well, I was going to sort of talk a bit about what he sort of did. So the use of what he does, so making heart patches and that, essentially what it does is reduces the need for transplants.
Yep.
In a nutshell. So looking at the award, all the way down the bottom, it says the award's been going since 2003.
Awesome, more than a decade. Whoops.
Yeah, well, you said a decade, so it's within...
Yeah. Within nothing.
Within reason.
Yeah. It's been a while. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yes, it's been going for a while. I do remember, like you were saying, the whole furor about stem cell versus adult stem cell versus embryonic stem cell. And, you know, a quote from the recipient himself, Dr. Carmine, says, besides serial ethical issues concerning embryonic stem cells, there's the serious risk that the embryonic cell could be rejected by the patient's body. So the use of adult stem cells is something that's already linked to the person. It's using cells of the person already. So even without the faith perspective or the Christian perspective on the use of embryonic versus adult, there's a medical issue of whether the work's even going to be accepted if it's used by, you know, from another person's cells.
Yeah, there is a medical cost and an ethical moral cost as well to choosing embryonic stem cell research and saying it's going to yield all these things. But,
the ethical consideration, which some people will just, you know, not consider, there's also the medical issue that it's a less potentially and likely a less viable outcome anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, let's whip on to this next one. So on Australia Day, people are awarded different honours. So, for example, we have the Australian of the Year, the Young Australian of the Year, and then there are people who receive Australia Day honours for things that they've done in the community. So the Catholic Weekly mentions a list of Catholics who received awards because of exemplary work that they've been doing. Among those are Bernie Shakeshaft from Armidale, New South Wales. He was named by the Prime Minister Scott Morrison at the ceremony, and he founded Backtrack YouthWorks, a program for disadvantaged young Australians in the Armidale region. That's a really nice bit of recognition. Jared, who else have we got in here?
Have you sent me that link? I'm still trying to dig it up.
Uh-oh. Okay.
You might have to read them off.
I might just go through a couple more then quickly. So we also had Sister Monica Mary, and she's the Congregational Leader of the Sisters of St. Joseph. She was awarded for her outstanding work in education, diocesan leadership, as well as inspiring women in religious life in the church. And she told the Catholic Weekly of St. Mary MacKillop as her and the Gospels as her inspiration for that. There were also local parishioners as well. So Rosanna Bainey was awarded for work within the Lebanese Australian community, as well as her work in multicultural affairs for the state of Victoria. She also spoke of her parents' Catholic devotion, inspiring her to help others. And then there was Mr. Peter Walsh, who migrated to Australia from the UK in 1975, and he was recognised for his work with the Catholic organisations in Victoria, including especially his role in the Catinians, I hope I said that right, especially for helping establish a Catinian community in the Holy Land. And this is basically a Catholic men's fraternity, and there are branches apparently in every state of Australia, and their goal is to strengthen Catholic family life and faith, and they have local meetings which are called circles. So really good to see quite a few Australians, and I think there are others that I've missed as well, but there are quite a few Australians who have been honoured and who have a Catholic background, and it's good to see that their good works are being recognised on a national level as well.
There is one I think I've dug up. Pretty sure it's this year. No, it is this year, 2020. So a member of a band that we're familiar with, both from our childhood and our children's childhood. Does the name Paul Field mean anything to you? It does, doesn't it?
It kind of sounds familiar. Yeah. Do you want to fill in the blanks, Jerry? Who's Paul Field?
So musician Paul Field is the manager of the Wiggles.
Okay. Yes.
So the coloured skivvy wearing gentleman and now lady. So he's received the Order of Australia Medal. He's a little busy being a... They're doing a free concert today, or they were doing a free concert, and so he's a former student of Patrician Brothers Blacktown. So he's got a mention in the article on Catholic Weekly as well. So I quickly tried to catch up with you guys, catch up with where you were, and ended up getting that instead of a list. But
excellent.
But yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought that was an interesting one.
Good to see. yeah, it's good to see that that there are Catholics who are doing some good works and being recognized for it publicly as well. It's not the recognition that people look for, is it? But the fact that they're being recognized tells us, you know, that good works are such an important thing for us to do as part of our faith journey.
Cool. I think we're going to put that link in the show notes, aren't we?
Yes, we are. Yep.
So the photo on the very top of that article is Paul Field.
Oh, there you go. Oh, I missed so that completely. Excellent. All right. So we'll finish up the episode with some follow-ups. So I loved this comment, and I hope I say your name correctly, but Kari Neal, she wrote on our Catholics of Oz Facebook page in response to our previous episode when we talked about the Australian bushfires. So she said, thank you. Just listening to you while doing the domestic tidy up. And I need to interrupt here, actually. I listen to a lot of podcasts while I'm cleaning up and doing chores, and I think there are a lot of people that do. So I thought that was amazing. It's good to see that. But she said here, friends have been directly impacted by the horrific fires in the southern states, while family in Melbourne have also been impacted by the smoke and lack of air quality. On top of prayers and financial contributions, our parish knitting group is creating pouches for wildlife centres, along with beanies, scarves, gloves and mittens to donate to charities to gift to those who have lost so much when the cooler weather arrives. While all help and assistance is necessary right now, I think of how much help will be needed in 6 months and longer. And I asked her if I could mention that comment because she was happy for me to do that. I asked if I could mention that comment because I really want to emphasize this great point that she's making, that there is going to be work to be done in the months to come. And, you know, like you said before, Joe, when the bushfires go out, that doesn't mean the problem's going to be solved. There's more to do. And I think her parish knitting group deserves an Australia Day honour as well. I think it's beautiful what they're doing. You know, making pouches for wildlife, and also, because what do we say? Almost 500 million animals were killed or affected by the bushfires too, which is a serious issue. But then... Yeah.
Going to be hard to know because there's different numbers with the animals, and
of course
I feel like I've heard over 1 billion.
Yeah,
but I think with the pouches, a lot of Australian animals do carry their young around in pouches. Like the instantly recognisable one is the kangaroo and the joey. But a lot of wildlife does use pouches for carrying their young around.
Yeah. So Kari, thank you so much for what you're doing in your small way to help with the bushfires, and I hope people who are listening will be inspired by what you said as well. And find, you know, ways to use their hands to help as well. If all of us pitch in some kind of way financially, especially with our prayers, or by making things that we know will make a difference, it will help a lot of our fellow Australians in the months to come. So thank you so much for that feedback. We really appreciate it. So let's call it a day. I think we're out of things to talk about now.
Thank you so much.
We're out of time, so yeah, that kind of decides for us. So thank you very much for listening to episode 25 of the Catholics of Oz. Before we go, we'd like to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create the Catholics of Oz. Today, we want to thank Robert W., Stephen G., Brian M., Daniel P., and Ben H. Thank you so much to all of you, because your generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for the Catholics of Oz and all of the shows on StarQuest to continue. So if you'd like to join them, you can do that by visiting sqpn.com/give. Our show notes and links for today's episode can be found by visiting sqpn.com/oz, spelt O-Z. You can also leave feedback and comments by finding the post of this episode on the SQPN Facebook page, which is facebook.com/starquestmedia. Also, we have our own Catholics of Oz Facebook page, and we'd like to invite you to join us there and make comments as well. And you can find that at facebook.com/catholicsofoz. And join us in discussing our latest episodes. We love hearing comments from people and being able to share them with others. You can also reach us by email at catholicsofoz@sqpn.com. Jerry, thanks for being on the show today.
Pleasure to have been here.
And once again, I am Lindsay Sant. Thank you for listening to the Catholics of Oz on StarQuest.